Ah, yes, the mystic and the physicist. And your incredible phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Our final hour here with William Arntz, the creator, of course, of What the Bleep Do We Know, and Deidre, who is dealing with, Haidt, by the way, who is dealing with what is called, Deidre, tell us more about the Tao of Surprise. Exactly what is that?
Well, once I glean that we are living in the age of surprise, my first question was, okay, what do we do with that? And God said, well, you must learn how to live in the Tao of Surprise. And I said, okay, what's that? And I received steps and tools about what that means. And basically, it boils down to having a practice of living in the moment of expectation of how you're going to meet a surprise, so that you can, as it says in Psalm 91, you know, you who attach yourself to the Most High will be lifted above the snaring trap, meaning that when we attach ourselves to the frequency of God, of the greater reality, we actually are able to be lifted out of the trap, the snaring trap of the surprises of our world. And we are living in a time where this rapid fire change with technology, with governments, with the natural world, the weather, and you know, we feel like we're a bit off court. You know, we've been knocked off our center. So living in the Tao of Surprise is learning how to find your center, come back into your center, that strong place of inner calm and peace, that where you can activate your intuition, you can really feel and sense the future of what's coming, and then have the wisdom to know how to handle what's come in front of you. And that's kind of in a little tiny nutshell what the Tao of Surprise is, the practice.
Has this made you a little more clairvoyant or psychically inclined?
Yes, well, I've always been clairvoyant and psychically inclined. I mean, all mystics are clairvoyant on steroids. What has happened, though, is I teach this to many, many people, that everyone reports back to me that they become clairvoyant. They become more psychic. And that's really what we're being asked to do right now, because that kind of clairvoyance will inform you where to go and where not to go. Like, you know, don't go left, go right. Left could be a disaster. Go right. So we have this intuition in ourselves. It's always there. It's about uncovering it and reconnecting and believing in it. And there's steps to do this. And I really truly believe that our survival depends upon having this ability. Animals have it. Animals have it.
They know when there's an earthquake coming, a tsunami, whatever.
And they leave. We also have it. It's just we've become disconnected from it. So, you know, what I want to say is you can become connected. There's a way and a path to become connected to your intuition and to your psychic abilities, your own clairvoyance, so that you are safe, so that you can live a good life.
The new work that, William, that you're both working on in collaboration with photographer Andrea Balog, tell us about the not-so-little book of surprises.
Well, I told you a little bit earlier, and it all happened at light speed, pun intended. Once I got the notion to start calling through Deirdre's transcripts in her poetry, we talked about it, and then she said, oh, I have this person I've worked with that I know, Andre Balog, who's the photographer. He's also a concert violinist, and he has pictures. Maybe we could use some of his pictures. I call Andre up, and he goes, oh, go to my website. He has 3,000 pictures there because he's such an artist, he doesn't know how to market it, but he takes these gorgeous pictures. So basically, within 3 months, the whole book was put together and off to the printer. And to me, that says, oh, my God, there's some magic going on here that this book, and it's a coffee table book. The pictures are, it's a large book, and it's, a lot of people use the book like an oracle, and they'll just open, it's like the I Ching, they'll just open to a page, and they'll read it with the image, and they'll just get a feeling, and that's really their meditation for the day. So we've had a lot of different ways in which people access the stuff in the book, but the thing that recently I've just realized that it really trips me out is that this book is kind of the manual for living in the age of surprise. And Deirdre and I have put together a presentation workshop. We call it The Mystic and the Physicist and the Tao of Surprise, where we talk about the Tao of Surprise and the age of surprise, and we go through it, and as we've been doing this, more and more of the book, we reference the book because it answers so much of what we're doing. So it's kind of like we were just guided by that intuition Deirdre was just talking about to include certain things in the book, not even knowing why. And now, a year later, we're like, oh, my God, this is the manual for the age of surprise.
How far ahead was What the Bleep in terms of timing? Or did it come out, do you think, at the right time?
It came out at exactly the right time. It really did. And it's funny because when we were making it, we were getting into the post-production, I started getting this this sense of urgency. I'm like, oh, my God, this has to land in 2004, and it has to be out in February. I just had this sense that it's got to happen, and it hit. And it hit there just as people were becoming interested. It also hit just as the whole email world was really happening. And that's how it spread so much, that people would see it, then they would just email all their friends around the country. And we were able to use the email. Now, you know, everyone's overloaded with social media.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, it's a different world. But back then, having your friend email you, and we had email lists and sign-ups, and everyone thought that was so cool. And so we hit it at just the right time.
Will you get numbers in terms of how many hits on Amazon Video?
Yeah, we will. In fact, I think the way Amazon Prime works is we get more than just numbers, we get dollars.
Perfect. Perfect.
Well, remember they said that we just got a picture that What the Bleep is in the top 10 picks for Amazon Prime since it's come out.
And do you know, William, how you can find it on Amazon Prime? If you're just scanning, what category might it be in?
Well, I jumped on Amazon Prime just 2 days ago, and it just came up on recent things.
Recent stuff, okay.
Yeah, now,
or new releases or something like that?
Yeah, it was on there. It also came up on Recommended for You, but, of course, that might have just been Amazon being clever and looking at my browsing history.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, that's being an old computer nerd, I kind of like, oh, that's what they're doing there. But it showed up a couple other places, too, so, it's pretty easy to...
I share my Netflix with my grandchildren. Where they live, and so whenever I go to Netflix, I see everything they watch. I'm under siege by cartoons. They're everywhere.
Of course.
To the phones we go. John in Palm Harbor, Florida. Welcome to the show. John, go ahead.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question for you was, when you discussed the, I believe it is the proton, as it crosses over, you mentioned the Mississippi going from like St. Louis to Los Angeles, and we can't see it. It's just there. What if it's actually attached or has a path that it's taking that we can't see, that we have no way, we don't have the technology to see yet, and all these paths that these atoms take, are actually forming the essence of life, that we just can't see it. And is that possible, like with quantum entanglement, is it possible that the other part that's away from the atom that are separated, could they actually be attached and we can't see it?
This is a question for the physicist.
Ah, that would be me.
That would be you.
Well, that's
it's really kind of a profound question.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting way to put it. Because so often we see in science, well, they'll say there's a certain thing, and it's just because we don't perceive it. Let's just say there may be another dimension, and in this other dimension, things are connected. Things really are connected. Those two electrons that are entangled, light years apart, in another dimension, they're not light years apart. They're still connected. In our physical dimension, it looks one way, but in this other dimension where they come from, they're still next to each other. So I think that's actually an interesting way and a really cool way to look at those things that seem inexplicable in this world, saying that there are other dimensions, other realities where things work differently. And just we're stuck in the physical, so our eyes or our instruments can't follow it. But in another reality, another dimension with other laws, it does work a different way. And so when the electron goes from L.A. to New York without seeing it, that's in this world. But in another world, it may just be like changing a one to a two, and suddenly it's different.
Do you believe, William, that the principles of the law of physics is the same all over the universe?
All over maybe this physical universe, but...
But there's more than that, right?
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of thoughts that that there are other universes where the physical laws are somewhat different, and so things would act differently there. So, I mean, the universe, good Lord, I mean, it's like everything all the time, forever and ever, amen. So to say that things are like they are here everywhere, no.
Next up, Charles in Elgin, Texas. Hey, Charles, go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Thank you, George.
Sure.
Deirdre's experience, really, it sounds so much, her mystical experience, I would guess, it sounds so much like what happened to me or what I had. Mm. And I think she must have also been involved in dancing and stuff too before some of her, you know, I guess what to say, enlightenment happened. But you know, with me, of course, I had a very different life setting, you know, that I sort of seemed to have dropped into. The whole thing. It was just kind of amazing. I kind of was curious as to, you know, what sort of led to some of her sort of major mystical experiences. What sort of beginnings?
Would it have been your mother's situation, Deirdre?
Well, yeah, my mother. My first experience was at 3 years old when. I had a vision looking up into my grandfather pine tree, and I was shown a truck running over our family tent. And I ran to the tent, and my brother was just born, and I picked him up, and I ran out of the tent. And then a truck ran over the tent.
For real. Oh, my God. It would have killed the little guy.
It would have, right. And if I'd been in the tent, me too, but I wandered out. It was nap time, and I left the tent. I never like to take a nap. And I went down to talk to my tree. And at that time, I never thought this is weird. What's that? I saw the vision. I said, I better get my brother. I never questioned it. And then it happened. And So that was probably the most radical experience I had, and it was very early. And then later in life, I kind of, you know, put that under the covers and tried to just be a normal kind of kid. But I would have these experiences, and all I can say is I must have just come in this way for whatever reason. I was my parents' surprise, because they were scientists. But I feel now that I came in with a purpose to help others and encourage others to take their mystical experiences very seriously and see them as a gift, and that we are here, really, we are all here to have that experience of a greater reality. That's why we're here. So I just want to encourage everyone to look at that side of yourself and give yourself permission to go there. Because when I talk to people, everyone I've talked to had something, but they put it away and hide it and try to forget about it. And what I want to encourage you is to not forget about it. Bring it to the forefront and embrace it, because this is where your superpowers are. You know, this is where the magic lives. And this is where the awe and the wonder and the beauty of life live.
What about, Deirdre, what about evil? Where does it lurk?
Well, that's a really excellent and a very big question. Many people will differ on this answer. I truly believe that evil does exist. There is evil in the world.
Yes.
The question is how and why. First of all, evil is something that we cannot fully understand, nor will we ever understand. Only God can understand what happens in evil. But in saying that, my experience and what I see because part of the work I do is reading of souls. I can see souls, I can see past lives, future lives, and I can see what happens to us in a very deep level. I see it with my eyes, and it's hard to explain it, but it's pretty accurate. So what I see happens when evil happens is that a person's light, their soul, gets shrunken, or it gets taken away to where that light, that spark, becomes very, very minute. And when that happens, this massive amount of chaos ensues. If you think of God as harmony, the opposite of harmony is chaos. This chaos ensues. And when this chaos ensues, that's where evil can happen. It's evil is the greatest misunderstanding of consciousness. It's the void of light and love. It's like a black hole. And so we even should have compassion for evil, because evil is the most lost.
Hold on for a second. Let's take the quick break and come back and pick that right up, and then we'll take final phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. The Not-So-Little Book of Surprises. We're going to come back and take your final phone calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with our final segment with William Arntz and Deirdre Hade as we talk about their latest work, which is called The Not-So-Little Book of Surprises. And, of course, William is the creator of the film documentary What the Bleep Do We Know. How many countries has that gone into now, William?
That's a good question. Well, it's gone into, when it first came out, I was in Bali, and people would come up to me and say, oh, it's so wonderful, you know, we've been seeing the movie here, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that's great. I don't have a distributor in Bali.
Yeah, how did it get here, right?
So basically, it's been pretty much everywhere. The book, I wrote a companion book to it, that's been translated into something like over 20 different languages.
That's amazing.
I get copies of stuff, I don't even know what language it is.
Yeah. That is amazing. Let's go back to Deirdre and finish up about evil, Deirdre. It's out there, but I think in the long run, good is going to win, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. And there is more good than evil. There is so much more good. But you know, when evil happens, it's so painful. We focus on it, but there is a lot of good, and the good will win. I know it will.
Is it an uphill battle?
You know, it feels like an uphill battle sometimes. It does. And when one has a practice of prayer and a practice of meditation, it really does give you a strength so that the uphill battle is not as difficult. That's why I always want to encourage everyone to have that personal relationship with the divine, because you really will receive a tangible energy, a very real strength to make doing your good works easier.
Sure does. William, when you were working on the SDI, Star Wars Initiative, do you think we continued it? Do we have something like that up there in space?
No. That would be my guess.
Would you be surprised if we did?
I would be a bit surprised. It wouldn't be like, oh my God, I can't believe it. But there were certain technical problems with it. So, you know, and Reagan sort of swept all the technical problems under the carpet so he could, you know, do some stuff with the Russians. But
right.
Yeah.
Was this his idea, or was there somebody else who came up with it?
Oh, no. Well, I was doing it back in 72.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Yeah, that's when I first was working on this. And originally, it wasn't going to be up in outer space. It was going to be in 747s flying up at 50,000, 70,000 feet. We were going to put the big lasers in that. That was the original thing. And then it turns out they figured out that wasn't going to work.
No, I don't think that would have worked at all.
No.
At all. What's your take on the situation with North Korea?
Oh, boy, what a mess.
Yeah.
You know, what a mess. And, you know, and there's this thing about, you know, sort of the two bullies calling each other names. You know, it's just like, that's just, I don't think that's the way to go. It's
going to get out of control, I think,
if
this keeps up.
It certainly can. And, I mean, there's a whole thing about diplomacy, and it's developed over thousands of years, actually, as a way to deal with it. Now, sometimes it's good to do things out of the box, but also it's diplomacy. There's a certain way to do things. And, you know, currently it seems that, you know, our president is not doing that. He's got a different take, but boy, oh boy, it makes me nervous.
Yeah, me too. Back to the calls we go. Let's go to Mary in New Jersey. Welcome to the show. Hi, Mary.
Hello. I have two questions for the lady.
Sure. All right.
Does she feel she has greater insight into the Bible? And the other question is the voice. Is there any way possible for her to describe? Has she ever heard a human voice that would be similar?
Yes. So, thank you so much for calling in. Do I have insight into the Bible? You know, I'll tell you, I don't want to claim that I have any great insight into the Bible. There's so many phenomenal people that have insight, but I will tell you that when I read the Bible, I get this incredible amount of knowledge that is just, it overwhelms me. I'm in awe. Knowledge about the Tree of Life, knowledge about the teachings of Jesus, and I say to Will, and I say to the people who listen to me, look, I wish I could take credit for this, for what's coming, but I truly feel that I'm an open doorway for a greater voice, and I'm just very grateful to receive it. And I feel that in the Bible, there are so many hidden treasures of truth that sometimes we overlook that. We can't quite see it. And as a mystic, his job is to look deeper and be able to see deeper with x-ray vision, and that's my duty. So that's what I try to do. And then the next question that you had, please, can you repeat that again?
The voice.
Yes,
have you ever heard a human voice that would be, like, you could compare it?
Well, the voice that I hear, I will hear in my mind, and I've spent a lifetime working to make sure that the voice really is the voice of God and not an errant voice of an ego or some thought form. And the way I always tested the voice as I was going through this practice was, you know, to ask the voice, you know, is this good? Are you wholly good? If you're not good, go away. You know, I would go through these steps so that the voice would be clear. And the voice that I hear, many times a voice will be a man's voice. Sometimes a voice is a woman's voice. And sometimes a voice is a chorus. So I feel that God is, there are faces of God. There's the masculine face. There's the feminine face. And then there's the face of the unity, and I call that the angels or the heavenly host.
I love it. So have you and William ever played around with a Ouija board?
Well, I'll tell you. I played with a Ouija board when I was 10 years old.
Okay.
And it's first and last time, because when I did it when I was 10 with my friends, people would come in and they would be like, somebody had died. And I threw the board down and I was like, why do you need this? I see these people without the board. So I said, forget about the Ouija board. I don't want to see ghosts.
I love it.
And I've never, ever done it since. But I don't know, Will, we never talked about that.
Will, did you ever play with a Ouija board?
Yeah, at one point, my friend, I was probably in junior high school, so one of my friends got it. And yeah, we messed around with it a little bit, and I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. But it didn't, you know, it didn't really do anything for me, and I was more into, you know, sports and cars.
Yeah.
Who knows? Well,
I mean, and the thing is, Ouija boards are fun, but I really feel for the time we live in, it's really about us now connecting to the highest deities, to the angels, to the prophets, because we need help. And I know that there are these realms that have different spirits in it, but I'm just interested in working with heaven. But that's just me. That's what I'm about.
Let's go to Joe in Long Island, New York, east of the Rockies. Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Deirdre. I'd ask you about, do you believe that there's specialist angels, like some people propose that Raphael's a specialist? Or do you think angels can help you with any specific problem? And also, do you believe there's such a thing as advanced meditators, that people are gurus in that area or not? And then, William, I just ask you about the title of that film, being it was the first film, being that you come from a kind of a Silicon Valley background, and how you arrived at that title.
Well, two great questions. I'll go first. I'll try to be brief. Yes, there are angels for every need that there is. If you could imagine that the Creator, or God, is the ocean, and in the ocean there's millions and millions of waves, and each one is unique. Those are the angels. The angels are actually, in the Hebrew, the Hebrew Melchim means a packet of light or a messenger of light. And these frequencies, these energies, hold an energy of healing of every sort imaginable. There's an angel that can help you with growing a flower. There's an angel that can help you heal a stomach ulcer. There's an angel for every single property that exists. And there is a hierarchy of angels. I work with the archangels, and the archangels were the first angels created. They helped create the heaven and the earth. They're all in the Old Testament, scattered about. And they also have names in the indigenous cultures and many cultures. They will be given different names. But these are really the beings that first came in to help create this reality as a messenger from all that is. And then the question about gurus, yes, there are absolutely people who are born here, avatars, gurus who do have this special advanced state of meditation and are here really for a purpose to bring light into our world, healing into our world, and to give great service. We're lucky when they're here. And we're lucky when we get to meet some of those people, some of those beings.
All right, let's take a few more calls. We're almost out of time. Jack is in Hawaii on the island of Kauai. First-time caller. Go ahead, Jack. Good to have you with us.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Great.
I'm a big fan.
Thank you, sir.
I've been listening for years since Art was doing it. I don't know if I called the right line. I'm a first-time caller.
That's
but maybe
okay.
Wild card would have been better. The reason I decided to call was because of What the Bleep Do We Know. I remember when the documentary came out years ago. I was managing a Blockbuster at the time. And it's not so much pertinent to that I called, but I wonder why people aren't more interested in epistemology and, really getting to the root of what we know and what we can know.
Let me start with that, and then I want to throw that to you, William, if I can. I think, for example, people who listen to this radio show are tuned in. They get it. But the masses probably don't. They don't understand. William, what do you think?
That's absolutely true. And, I would say 90% of the people out there don't even know what the word epistemology means. But they just, their interests
exactly.
are elsewhere.
Can you say that on the radio?
I did say it on the radio.
That's right.
So that's just, and that's the, if you look at the humanity, that's, most people, they're interested in much more, you would say, basic things, more like survival, or just, wonderful things like their family and doing that, but that more philosophical bent of understanding things, it's not, it's not for everyone, but for those of us who love it, it's the thing.
It's there. Jack, thank you for that. Keith in Phoenix. Go ahead, Keith.
Hey there. First of all, I'd like to say I'm a big fan.
Thank you.
I love the movie. Now, I've had my own personal experiences with God, and it's not so much a belief as a fact. I kind of follow Bob Dylan around and followed the music and the love, and it led me to some magical places, but magic beyond words. But my question tonight is, I've been lucky to have seen energies, and I've seen different auras, and I've seen the flames around people, and the slow-moving particles of flames, and I've seen mine, and I've had some magical experiences with that as well. I had an abduction experience, if I just say it, but they told me that that's the reason. And now I was purple, and a lot of people were yellow, I guess, but I just want to know how to go about taking all this magic and doing something with it.
I'll give that to you, Deidre.
Beautiful. Well, I just want to say thank you for sharing this and for speaking up, and because it's so important we begin to have these conversations about these experiences. And definitely what's happened to you is that you are one of the keepers of the flame. And the keepers of the flame, they're different groups of souls. Like there are watchers, there's keepers of the flame, there's a group. And the keepers of the flame, you're the ones that hold the sacred fire of creation, because we have the elements of fire, water, and air that the universe was made on. And the fire, the sacred fire is the catalyst, it's art, it's catharsis, it's turning energy of confusion into light and into love. And I really see that this abduction that you had, that you experienced, was for you to be activated so that you could be and could know who you really are, what your soul's purpose is on the planet right now. And I would say just make your music, create your music, be in creativity, and allow the gift you have, this gift of singing the light, to work through you in your music, and you will heal many, many people.
That's the way to do it. Thank you two, for being on the program. The name of the book, The Not-So-Little Book of Surprises, and, of course, the film, What the Bleep Do We Know? For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.